Okay, so I just pressed record. So we are recording the meeting. And the other thing too is because this is a the Guam Cancer Trust Fund Council is a government council, we are required to make sure that everybody turns off, sorry, turns on their camera so we can see everybody and see who's attending. So
Excuse me, Dr. Rachel.
yes.
Peter just emailed that he's trying to get in. So I think he's got the wrong link.
Oh yeah, he probably has the wrong link.
Yeah.
Rem, can you contact him? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So today is we are it's 4:04 p.m. on March 25th, and we are reconvening, calling back from recess because we had to recess last week because we ran out of time and didn't have time to finish our business, and we had some issues. So the main agenda today, and Remelin, if you want to go ahead and put that up on the screen and just share the agenda. But really, we're just calling back. We're just calling back to recess to finalize our discussion and decision regarding the application from GMHA. So I just wanted to give a real quick background for those of you who might not have been at the last meeting. So for the FY 2021 funding, GMHA submitted a request, and their original request was for $1 million. And so when the council met back in November, their response was that both the requests for the scanner, the lab information system, were unallowable, so we denied that request. But then we also had additional questions and needed additional information regarding the medications, the provision for funding for local oncologists, the patient family cancer care prevention training and education program materials, and then the inflationary costs. So GMHA, they submitted their response on March 4th. And their revised request was for 140,000. So we began our discussion last week on March 11th, but the council members had more questions because of the use of devices, internet, and language interpreters. So we asked them to provide more information, and then GMHA was able to submit their response, second response, on March 18th. So that's what we're here today to discuss. And let me see. Rem, were you able to do? Okay, so I guess the first one, so the first issue has to do with so really the medications is not an issue. I don't think we had any issues with that. And then, but the real issue had to do with the patient family cancer.
Peter's still trying to come in. I just forwarded him the link
Yeah,
via
I don't see
WhatsApp.
him. He's not
Can
on
you?
here. I just emailed him the link.
Okay, and
Okay.
I just sent it to him via WhatsApp.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Because he just called me.
Let me see.
Dr. Rachel, it's not, I'm
It's
not
not letting
letting
you
you share.
share?
No,
Okay, I'll
I'm
share.
not.
I'll
Okay.
share. Okay, let me, sorry about that. Okay, can you see that? Can everybody see that? Okay, great. All
Yep.
right. Okay, so the issue to finalize today is for budget item number 4B, the request for patient family cancer center prevention training and education programs materials. And
Before we
this.
move forward, Dr. Rachel, may I go on record? I know we had discussed the 75,000 appropriation in the last meeting to the oncologist, which was approved. Am I correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yes, so I'd like to go on record that I wish to rescind my vote for approval on that and vote no on that.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
it is my position, and I'd like to state that it is my position that it is not the Guam Cancer Trust Fund's obligation to provide salary for a physician. I do know that I understand that there are some patients that are uninsured, but I do know for a fact that they try to collect that, and those that have no insurance, many of them go to public health and are able to avail of MIP and Medicaid. And then there are also those with insurance. So the physician will get paid by an insurance company. So I don't think it is our obligation to pay a salary for an oncologist. So I'd like to go on record and rescind my vote to approve on that specific section of their application.
Kathy, I just got on. Can I'm sorry, I'm a little late. Can you repeat what you just said? What did you make a motion?
Sorry, I muted. I'm going on record to rescind my vote for approval to the $75,000 that we had passed in the previous meeting last week for the hiring of the oncology at $75,000. I did vote to approve that, and I'm going on record to rescind my vote of approval.
Okay, I know there's been a lot of emails back and forth over this issue, and I got a couple of thoughts relative to that.
Peter turn on his camera?
Everybody needs to turn on their camera.
Okay, Peter, I got it.
Oh, Senator Moyano, welcome.
Hey. Can you see me now?
Yes, thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, we've been going back and forth on this for quite a while now. And I think as far as the legislative intent of what we're all about, what we're supposed to do, is to rescind and not give them $75,000 for an oncologist is totally against what we're all about. There is absolutely nothing in the law, the rules, or regulations that prevent us from doing that. And to the contrary, it allows us to do this. I mean, I for one, have to kind of paint a little stroke here of what we're doing, because the entity that we're giving this money to, the picture was painted that this institution is rolling in dough. It's not rolling in dough. It's worse than nonprofit organizations anywhere in the island. And I previously wrote the entire council about this. And I guess right now, that's all I can think of is that there's a cancer patient out there that needs an oncologist, and we're gonna, for $75,000, we're gonna prevent that patient from getting care. I mean, I'm really looking at it from the standpoint of, there's a patient that needs this oncologist. This is not a matter to me anymore about what we can and cannot do, because as far as I'm concerned, we can do it. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to help people suffering from cancer. And these people at GMH just don't have the resources. And I'll give you just another example of, unfortunately, and I don't agree with all this stuff they have to go through, but even with respect to what we're going to vote on as far as the tablets, you know what happens if we table that? They're going to have to go through, because of their administrative rules, at least 3 committee meetings to come up with rules and regulations on how to promulgate protocols with respect to tablets. So I just think that we're being a really, really harsh on this applicant, especially with the oncologist. And when I can tell you right now that at GRMC, an on-call oncologist is being paid $267,000. And when you look at $75,000 from an oncologist, I mean, when I first saw that, I was like, you know, great, they must have worked out a really good deal with FHP. But I look at it very differently. And, you know, really, I guess there's a part of me that has a heart for a cancer patient and the staff there that doesn't have the resources that we all think they may have. They just don't have it. And I think that we've delayed their request so long, and they have come back to us in good faith over and over. And what are we going to do again? Table it or rescind it? I mean, I think that
I'm sorry, if I can interject, Peter, I am just rescinding my vote. It is my prerogative how I choose to vote, and I am choosing to rescind my vote. I don't know how the other council members feel, but I your point is noted, and your sentiments are noted, your position is noted, but I feel otherwise, and my position is I don't think it's the Comcancer Trust Fund.
What will it take to change your mind?
It will not. I've done my due diligence over the weekend and over the week. So I choose not to vote on this because I personally do not think that it is our responsibility. I'm sorry, the Guam Cancer Trust Fund's responsibility. This is my position, that we need to fund an oncologist. That is my position. I sit on this board. I have a vote.
We can fund an airline ticket, but we can't fund an oncologist that's going to provide direct care to a patient. It doesn't make sense, Kath. It just makes no sense. I mean, think about it. We can fund hundreds of thousands of dollars for airline tickets for somebody to get to an oncologist, but we cannot fund to have an oncologist already there when a patient needs care.
I beg to differ, because some of the patients that tend to go off island are those that need specialty care that is not available on island. Because a doctor will not send and the insurance will not approve off island coverage if the care is available here. It's just not cost effective.
I'm gonna just say one last thing, and I'm actually, because I suffered from cancer and I know what it's like, I'm going to plead with you guys. I'm going to plead with every single one of you council members to approve this thing on the oncologist. You know, I tell you, cancer
Peter,
hurts.
My son has cancer, so I am very familiar with your situation. We've been through
it. You've already made your statement clear of what you want. I'm trying to appeal to the others because I can't appeal to you. So it's okay. I'm feeling very, very, to be honest with you, very emotional about this, because I know GMH. I've worked there for 14 months. I know what these people have and do not have. And if we don't allow $75,000, which is a drop in the bucket for an oncologist, it truly makes the difference between one person living or dying. It truly does. And that's all I have to say. I hope everybody else will at least, you know, instead of looking at the law, look into your heart and vote for giving them the 75 grand. They've waited so long.
So Dr. Rachel, I'd like to pose the question that if we don't fund this, does that mean GMH will not have an oncologist and someone will die? I want that on record, that if we don't fund
Kathy, you're taking it out of context.
Okay, well.
And she's not in a position to answer that. She's not at GMH. That's not a fair question to ask, Rachel.
Go ahead, Ken.
My position is that Guam Memorial gets more money from the Healthy Futures Fund than the Guam Cancer Trust Fund gets from the Healthy Futures Fund. And it comes down to a question of priorities, because for all of 2019 and part of 2020, I was doing a monthly review of the expenditures at Guam Memorial Hospital. And here we're talking about $75,000 for an oncologist. They spent $130,000 sending a person to a conference in London that they could have attended online for $899. So I think when we look at how we use the funds, the limited amount of funds available to us to support not just GMH, but other organizations that are trying to provide services and support for people with cancer, we need to take a look at that picture as well. hospital gets more Healthy Futures funds than we do. So with our limited amount, what can we do that's in the best interest of the most people with cancer? Now, I agree that, you know, we need to think about the people suffering from cancer as well. And that's the point that Peter's making. But we have to think about how we can use the monies, that dispense the monies to provide the things that aren't being provided for these people. Because Guam Memorial, and I'll go back to BJ's audit of Guam Memorial, they had, I think at the time, 44 people in accounting, nobody in collections. So we have to look at that, that we can do with this amount of money to provide support and services for people. And one of the things, I don't know if you're aware of, but I was, you know, I got involved in on testimony back in 2016, 2017, was where we had all these contracts being issued by Guam Memorial Hospital. And it, sometimes we had people getting double and triple pay from the hospital. I just don't want us to fall into that situation where we're providing $75,000 to someone who already has a contract with the hospital and who is already billing for services they render through the hospital separately than the hospital charges. And I didn't believe it when I heard it, but when I started looking into those expenditures, I was surprised to see that those people were correct, that that was happening. I brought that up. Nobody's concerned about that. What I'm concerned about is, we have a small pot. There's a big need. Where can we get the most bang for the buck? Now, the oncologists, as Kathy rightfully pointed out, they've got money coming from insurance companies, MIP, Medicaid. So that service is going to be paid for. What things are not going to be paid for that we can look at filling the gap? I think that's where we need to look closer, because this need is getting bigger, as we saw in the information that GMH provided as far as the cancer patient load. We're seeing an increase there. What areas are not being met? Now, Guam Memorial has identified some things, and within our limited pot and our limited ability because of the box we're in as far as what we can fund and not fund, I think we need to be very careful. And paying $75,000 for an oncologist is something that we need to look very carefully at, because we don't have that much money.
Yvette and Rachel, can I ask you a question? Because you're going to have experience with this that some of us don't have. And I think it's a real relevant question to what we're all about, rather than looking at how GMH manages all its other money. But in the past, when the Guam Cancer Trust Fund has given funds to GMH, has there ever been any fraud or misuse of those funds?
I was not here at that time. I've only been here now for 3 years, so I can't say. I don't know, Yvette, you have a longer history. Not that I know of.
Not that I'm aware of. At least we didn't really have access to the books, but nothing was brought to the council's attention at that time.
Because in reviewing audits, we have never been cited for anything that we have given GMH.
That's correct. And so can I add to that, Peter, that we were audited when OPA audited us in 2020, their audit was from, I believe, 2013 to 2018, that 5-year period. And so during that time, GMHA did receive funds from the trust fund, and they were not the ones that were raising the eyebrows of the OPA. It was a different organization.
Correct. I just kind of want to try to focus in on one point. is that we are not here to criticize the management of any nonprofit, any hospital, or anybody. You know, we're not, I'll be the first to tell you right now that if you look at employee to bed ratios, the Guam Memorial Hospital has 400 more employees than a hospital its size should have. So I agree with you, Ken. I totally agree with you. But as far as we're concerned, you know, if there was an abuse of funds coming from us by GMH in the past, I would be the first one saying, no way, I'm not going to vote for this. But there is no history. There is no pattern. There's not even one incident of abuse of funds coming from us. And I just feel that based on everything they've submitted to us, based on us coming back twice, asking them for more things, you know, they've been very responsive. They've been very cooperative. They've been very reasonable, rational. And I think that, you know, yes, I totally understand what you're saying about a trip to London or a trip anywhere. You know, that's not unique to the Guam Memorial Hospital. But that's not what we're voting on. We're voting on an oncologist. We're voting on $75,000 for an oncologist. And I want to kind of narrow the scope of our thought process in making this decision to award this money, because at least for me, I'm going to vote to award it.
Go ahead.
My concern is that there's a big difference between a staff person and a contract to a privately practicing physician or a physician clinic. Because a privately practicing physician has access to resources beyond what we are talking about here. We cut back the allotments to a lot of other organizations because we didn't have the levels of funding that we were hoping to have. So we cut back on those other organizations that provide the types of services and support that are not covered by insurance or other, you know, like Medicare or MIP. We cut those back. And my concern here is that if we award a $75,000 contract to a private entity or a private practicing doctor who's going to be getting paid through other means. And that's what we saw with some of the contracts with GMH. We have doctors who are being paid $300,000 a year, yeah, but they're billing for their services in addition to the pay.
But we're not talking about the, I'll go on record by saying that I've read Dr. Uggen's contract. And I can tell you right now that, you know, the $300,000+ that she's making, you know, holding three positions at GMH and also, you know, making money at a clinic is unconscionable. But that's not what we're talking about here, Ken.
No, it's not. You're absolutely right. We're not talking about that. We're talking about how do we make sure, or how do we know that this money is going to go solely to the support of the cancer program and not be a windfall bonus to a doctor who's in private practice and has a clinic. Now, I don't recall seeing anything that this money is going to hire a staff person. I see that it's going to a contract support. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
See, that's the concern that I have because of past abuses that we've seen. And I'm not saying that whoever they're talking about, I'm just saying we have a limited amount of money, and I would be feeling different if this money was going to pay for a staff position at GMH as opposed to a contracted position, because that's where the slippage begins. you know, we got about, a contracted position.
How about if we put our heads together and come up with a conditional approval condition on them giving us documentation to show that this money is going where we intend it to go?
So let me think about that for a second. The difference between if we approve this conditionally upon a documented fact that Guam Memorial Hospital has retained as a staff person a qualified oncologist that does not have a private clinic, would that be acceptable to you?
I don't think that you can, from what I understand, this oncologist is an on-call oncologist. I don't think you can condition it on the private clinic, because practically everybody's going to have a private clinic.
May I interject? I think they specified the oncologist, didn't they, Dr. Rachel?
The oncologist is Dr. Samir Umbrali, who's a full-time physician at FHP.
At FHP.
I mean,
from what I understand, there is no oncologist at GMH that's credentialed there.
Can I make a suggestion? I mean, I think we can go round and round for a long time on this issue. And what I'd like to do is maybe step back and you know, there's really three parts of the GMHA application. They're asking for, number one, for the medications, that request, that's $25,000. The oncology request, which is $75,000. Number three is the, let me look at my notes again. Patient family cancer care prevention and education program material segment, that's 20. And then of course the admin fee. I suggest that I would really like to just get this taken care of today and we make a decision. And so why don't we, you know, I propose that, you know, I think we've kind of heard both sides of the coin with regard to the oncologist. Let's talk about the other issue, the $20,000 for the patient family cancer care. And then at the end, I already made a poll. And the council members can go into a breakout room, we can vote, and then we can, you know, we can decide we're gonna fund this segment, but we're not gonna fund this segment. And we'll make a decision, we'll vote on it, and then we'll take care of it that way. Is that agreeable to the other council members?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Yvette? Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Peter? Is that okay,
yes.
Peter? Okay. Uh-huh. All right. So thank you for, you know, I appreciate everybody expressing their opinion and with regard to this part of the request. So let's go ahead and we'll move on to the next one, the next item, which is the patient family cancer. It's so long, sorry. Patient Family Cancer Care Prevention and Education Programs and Materials. And so I guess there was some question about, I think somebody mentioned on the matter of interpreters, you know, part of the accreditation requirement is that the hospital must ensure that it is capable to provide cultural and linguistically appropriate services to ensure quality and accuracy. And so, and they felt like this is not the responsibility of the trust fund. So I think that there is some feeling that interpreters, the payment for interpreters is not, the request for interpreter funding interpreters is not something that we should be doing. I don't know. So I just opened that up for discussion by the council members, and also the use of iPads. Anybody have any comments?
I'm personally I'm sorry, go ahead, Ken.
I like the idea of culturally sensitive materials. I think that one thing that I've noticed a lot around Guam is that there's a lack of educational materials in any program. And along with that, there's a lack of cultural materials. I know that years ago at Judah Foundation, they took a lot of materials and translated them into the different languages in the Federated States of Micronesia. And that program was very successful, very heavily used. So that part, the part that I'm concerned about is the translators. And the reason I say that is because I have seen some of the people that I have talked with, some of the people that they've been using as that have been used as translators in the court system. And my concern is they're just taking people who claim that they can speak both languages, and we don't really have an idea as to whether or not they're competent enough. That's my concern there. I'm not against it per se. I'm just concerned about, are we getting what we're paying for? Especially when you consider we're talking about a very technical field. And that would be my concern. How do we make sure that the people that we are paying for to provide medical translations are actually doing it? Because the doctors and caregivers can't. That's why we're bringing in translators in the first place. And I'm just wondering, is there some kind of a certification that translators get in order to be certified? Or could I just say, hey, I speak pidgin, you know? So if you get anybody that's real heavy in pidgin, I speak the kind, you know? That's my concern. The materials, I agree with. The translators, I'm worried about, but I'm open to discussion on that. What other part was there in that? Oh, the iPads.
Yeah, iPads.
I'm concerned about that because iPads have a tendency to walk away or be misused. I don't know. I know that we were talking with them about coming up with a way of controlling that. Did they ever respond to that? Because I didn't see that specifically on their use of the iPads for limited to cancer patients.
There would be a label on the devices that it's limited to the use of, I guess, that department or the cancer patients in the department.
How many were they looking at?
Yeah, carts.
The reason I'm concerned about that is because then there was that whole thing about Wi-Fi expenditures. And if we don't put in the Wi-Fi, then the iPads are basically useless. But my observation is very few people don't have a smartphone these days. I mean, when you go down to public health, everybody sitting there in public health is on a smartphone. So are we doing this just to get, 10 iPads, I think it was?
Something yes, like that? 10 iPads on the carts. So I don't think the iPads would be able to walk away because they're going to be attached to those carts. Those will be really awkward to try to get through.
Okay, they're going to be fixed to something.
Yeah.
Okay, so that eases my mind there a little bit. But my concern is more on the quality of the translators. Or is there any certification or anything like that? Does the hospital have a certification program? I don't know.
No, it doesn't.
The CERICOM program that we have, the application, they have medical translators.
They have?
It's a subscription that would provide translation services for anyone in need, our cancer patients.
So we try
to use the court's translators or interpreters, but they're also certified, but they're not certified with medical terminology. So the Seracom app that we purchased into a subscription, they have medical translators or interpreters.
Okay, so this is this like a web-based service where when you need a translator, you bring them up on an iPad or a laptop or something like that?
Or on the telephone, yes. It's 24/7.
I have a question on that. So I was wondering, I didn't see in the application, but I was wondering in your breakdown of the interpreters needed it, what is the most common languages? And is that available in the Cryocom that you're referring to, or the Seracom?
Yeah, so we get a monthly report from Seracom on what calls actually went into them. So sometimes if we have doctors that have, you know, that speak Japanese or Korean, they'll go ahead and take care of that for us. But like we've had like Ukrainian or Spanish, then when we call up that 24/7 hotline number, it'll automatically register. It'll give us information like how many times you called, how long did it take for an interpreter to actually respond, if we had any drop calls or any calls that couldn't be. So we've had problems with like Chuki's translation. So if we couldn't get one through Seracom, then we'll try to get one locally. And we're trying to also start a program where we can have them medically certified interpreters on Guam, because that's one of the hardest interpreters that we can find for medical certification. We use some of that on board, but we need to try and get them certified.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. So I'm wondering, what is the most common, that you mentioned that 50% of the cancer patients need some kind of interpretation. What is the most common language that's needed to support that? Is it you mentioned the Ukrainian, or is it?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
We actually can get that information. Sorry, we didn't provide it in the application that we submitted, but we would have to work with our IT department to run a report for us, further detailing the most common language needed for interpreter assistance.
Yeah, the Seracom sounds like a great device or app that's very helpful. Just if it's quite expensive though, and most of our interpretation is needed in Chuki's, and that's not useful through the Seracom, but more through the local interpreters, then I'd be hesitant to support that part of the communication section of the application.
May I ask, how often do you use that service? I know that you said you don't have the data on which language, but is it, you have 50% of your patients have language barriers. So are you saying it's being utilized every single week?
They do utilize it usually weekly, because of, especially now because we're on the lockdown and there's no patient visitors allowed, and it's kind of difficult to call the family to do interpretation, the nurses do call those numbers. Right now the nurses are using their cell phones, because the phones that were issued for the Seracom, they issued us, what do you call those, cordless phones. And if it's at the nurse's station, it doesn't reach the rooms. So that's why we're trying to move into tablets. But the nurses do use them. I think the big issue was they really didn't want to use their personal phones, even though it's a toll-free number to call.
Just briefly, I want to say that I agree with the practical points that Ken raised, and I also agree with what Yvette said with respect to the device and whether you're really going to have access to be able to do translations for people in Micronesia. As far as how I would go and vote on this, I would definitely support the tablets, but I would not support the translators, or I wouldn't support the translation device.
But the translation device, GMH is already paying for that. We just actually wanted to use the needed the equipment for the patients to use. And we'll break it down with the Sarah-Cram, it's the whole hospital, not just cancer, but we'll break it down to find out
cancer usage.
The cancer usage only.
I think that where the potential problem is for us is I really feel that if we give an award for translators, it could come back to haunt us in an audit. I don't see where our rules and regulations or the laws that govern us would allow us to fund a translator. I don't think that really gets into an area of direct patient care, for example, is different from the oncologist.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they say that they have a translator serve us? So we're not hiring translators, we're paying by the call, basically. So if I'm a doctor, I have a cancer patient, I have a complicated a diagnosis to give to someone from Pulawat, for example, who barely speaks English at all. They get someone that speaks that language through the translator service. So we're not hiring a person. We would be paying for the services for that call to someone who was fluent in that language and certified as a medical translator. Is that correct? It's not hiring a person.
Correct.
Is so that it?
Is it a subscription service, or are you paying per translator or per translation case?
So GMH is already paying for the subscription, and then they also pay per translation. So the request was for the tablets and the tablet stands to be used. We already have the translation services available, and the Wi-Fi will be taken care of in the next couple months. So
it's just the equipment to be able to provide to the patient.
We're just talking about the iPads on the cart that's bolted to a cart that rolls up to the bed. Is that correct?
Right.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's different.
So can I also ask another clarifying question similar to that? So the Sarah-Cram was one, and then you also mentioned PRAIMS on demand. How does that fold into this translation service?
The CRAMS on demand is not, it's education based, where if a patient like with cancer or a specific cancer, they can pull up educational information that can be given to the patient and the patient's family. So they can view all of that on the tablet, and they can go through it and choose videos or choose documents that they want printed out and taken home. So the app will be installed in the tablet, and they can use it that way.
So in your revised request or your updated request, is the cost for that incorporated in this, or is that already being taken care of by GMH through separate funding?
The CRAMS, that's already being taken care of by the GMH funding.
Okay.
Both applications are already being paid for already.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. It was a little misleading when it was all included under the revised request for funds. Thank you for clarifying that.
So I have a follow-up. That's a really good question, Yvette. So the $20,000 is not including the CRAMS and the Sarah-Cram. It's just for the iPads and the carts, the carrying carts. Is that correct?
That's correct. But one of the person on the education team, we have the basic for the CRAMES and on-demand education, we have the basic, but they also have a subscription for
specific for cancer.
For cancer, that's
cancer
more
care.
Wide, more widely. Instead of just the basic, they can focus on cancer.
So it would be.
So it's like the cancer module.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Right.
It's,
okay, got it.
If
got
we request for the cancer portion of.
So what you're asking is to fund the cancer portion, which is a more extensive information resource specific to cancer.
Okay, got it.
And that can be broken down on invoices as far as how much it costed for us to utilize the cancer.
Can you clarify, what is the subscription period? Is it a year?
Yes, it's a yearly subscription.
Okay.
And it's broken down by module, correct?
We can request for it to be broken down by module, and specifically the cancer module in this case.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments before we break into, we can go into a breakout room, because when we do the polling, we need to make sure it's only the council members that vote. And we can do that in a breakout room real quick. Any other questions or comments or concerns?
May I ask a question? This is Joe from St. Augustine's office.
Sure, Joe, go ahead.
I might understand that you guys are going to go into like executive session, or?
All we're going to do is just go to a breakout room so we can vote, and then we'll come back. It should take us like a minute.
And what are you guys voting on?
We're voting on the different sections of their application. The medication request, which is $25,000, the oncologist request, which is $75,000, and the patient family cancer care prevention training and education request, which is $20,000.
Okay, I was just curious if this was a vote on these things. I'm not very familiar with the law specific to voting in a closed session, but I just wanted to put that on the table that I wanted to make sure I understood what you guys
can
were
everybody
on.
Can everybody come into the breakout room, and but only council members vote?
Well, I mean, we could do the vote now. It's just that how do we make sure that it's only that we got to just make sure that only council members vote?
Do a roll call.
We can do that now.
Yeah, we can do it by roll call.
I don't think we need to go by into a breakout room.
Yeah, that would violate. That would be a violation
of open government law. I think that's the point
we're
trying to raise.
Because I was doing this snazzy little poll on Zoom.
Well, if everybody could go into the room, that would be fine.
We don't have to go into a room. What I can do is I can make it not anonymous, so that everybody's answer will be visible. Like,
okay.
But, yeah, okay, so let me
just do a roll call for each section.
Let's
and it's recorded.
Okay, I'm gonna launch it and see. Okay, can everybody see it?
I can see it.
I can.
But can Joe you see it? I think we might be better with a roll call.
I can't vote.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can't. I would just rather do the roll call.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would prefer the roll call too.
Okay. So the first thing.
I'm sorry. You said you can't vote. What did you say?
Yeah, I couldn't vote because I launched it.
Oh,
so.
Because she's the host. The host cannot participate in the call.
So let's do roll call.
Okay. So the first the first one has to do you approve the GMHA request for $25,000 for medications required for cancer control? Okay, so roll call.
Call the roll.
All right, so I'll just go on my screen. So Kathy, yes or no?
25,000 for the
medications required for cancer control.
Yes.
Okay, Yvette.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
And I also vote yes. Okay, next.
And for the record, one council member is absent.
Is absent, correct. Yes. All right, the next one is for, do you approve the request for 75,000 for a local oncologist, the local oncologist? I'll start this time and I will say yes. Okay. Peter, what do you say?
Yes.
Ken?
No.
Yvette?
Yes, but may I ask that that's delineated in their invoices so that we know what exactly what they're paying for, what services they're paying for?
Okay. Okay.
But in general, yes.
Okay. Kathy?
No.
Okay. All right. And then, of course, Dr. Wadi's absent. Okay, so I'm going
to
break up.
I'd like to state for the record, Peter did vote. For the record, if Dr. Ohadi votes yes, then it would be, you know, a majority. If he votes no, then it's a tie.
Correct. Okay.
So what does that mean?
Well,
question.
There's three yeses and two noes. So if he votes no, it's a tie.
But he's not.
Yes.
He's not here. So.
But he has officially notified the council that he was not able to attend due to a meeting.
Yeah, but we're obligated by law to attend their meetings.
Well, I mean, he can't come.
Yeah, you can't punish someone who doesn't come.
Yeah, we can't punish him.
No, I'm not trying to punish him. I don't want to punish GMH. I mean, if we have a majority now, why can't we just make the award?
Well, we have a quorum, so we can vote.
Yeah,
our vote today.
We already have a quorum.
Yeah, we have a quorum.
It's 3-2, so it passes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay, so for the next section, I'm going to break it up for the patient. I don't know why it's so hard for me to patient, family, cancer, care, prevention, training, and education programs material section. For in particular, for the tablets and the carrying cart, that section, do you approve, yes or no? Ken, I'll let you go first this time.
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Yvette?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
And I'll also vote yes. Okay, and then for the section, the module, the cancer module for the interpretation provider and translation services, do you approve, Yvette?
No.
Kathy?
No.
Ken?
Yes.
Peter?
No.
And I also vote no. Okay. All right, so I think that's everything. Okay, all right. I think that's everything we have on our agenda. So I just wanna, before we move on, I just wanna say thank you very much to GMHA staff and for participating and coming and answering some of our questions. We really appreciate it. And hope you didn't feel too much on the hot spot. And also to the members, thank you. We had a nice discussion. And it was good. So the next thing on our agenda is just open discussion and information. Does anybody have anything they want to share before we adjourn?
Excuse me, Dr. Rachel?
Yes.
So the category on the oncologist program, was that approved or?
Yes, that was approved. And what we'll do is Remelin will send you, she'll be getting the letter approved, and because it has to be approved by the president and then the contract. So it'll take us, you know, she'll be in contact with you guys, with you ladies.
Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much, everyone. Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. Anything else?
I have something I'd like to raise for discussion.
Okay.
Our rules and regulations.
Yes. Okay. Do you, yeah, what would you like to, oh, would you, are you asking what's the status?
Yes, we really need to move forward with that.
Yes. Okay, so I sent the rules, the old and the new and the comments. I sent those to legal counsel, Anthony Camacho, so that he can look over, because if you remember, there was some, that there was that one public comment, or it was from then Senator Luis Munoz's office that raised a whole bunch of issues. So that was sent to our legal counsel. I've asked him if he can look over, because, you know, some of their, one of their comments even said, you know, this is illegal, which I don't agree with. But, and we've also sent those comments to Senator Therese Terlahi's office. And Remlin, where else did we send it? Somebody else was asking for it, but yeah, you're absolutely right. We really need to get on the ball and try to get that done. And so it's gonna take us some time to go through it. I was hoping that Anthony Camacho can look through it and actually make sure that, you know, because some of the things that were being raised, we were being told, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. And, you know, you remember my comments telling you that, of that experience. Well, when
I merely asked because we've been entertaining this since the public hearing, which was on September 15th, I think. And yes, this is already March going into April. And you know, we keep waiting for a response from the legal counsel because we can't move forward, but we really need to find a way to get him to respond so we can move forward, because those rules and regulations need to be filed with the legislature.
Yeah. I mean, in his defense, he didn't get it until like about 2 weeks ago, because you know, we were focused on the application, and so it kind of just went by the wayside. And so he's a busy guy, but he did communicate with me today and said that he was trying to work on it to get me something by later today, but he just wasn't able to do it. So he is working on it, but I think we should go ahead and just start, because some of the issues there are some issues that we can decide whether or not we want to, what our decision is going to be, that it's not a legal question. Like, for example, in the rules and regs, if you remember, one of the things that we wanted to change was to put a cap on how much an organization can use funding for salaries, right? For whether it's for patient navigators and stuff. So we tried to put a cap, and, you know, both the senator and Ellie from Guam Cancer Care said, you know, that's unfair and we don't agree with this. So we need to, you know, that's something that it's not necessarily, it's not illegal. I think we can make a decision about that. And I actually, after time has passed, I've kind of softened on my stance on that. And I feel like, okay, you know, maybe we don't need to put an actual cap, but we just need to be more diligent about making them accountable for how they're actually using the funds. And I think it's much easier now that we have the proper staff, because, you know, the previous one was not doing a good job about it. So, you know, I'm willing to rethink that and kind of soften it in response to that issue that was raised. And that was like, really, that was the main issue that Guam Cancer Care raised. And so I'm open to that. And a lot of things too were kind of like wording issues. clerical errors, or they just didn't like the wording. And so I, you know, Remelin and I can kind of go through those minor things. Or if you know, I don't know how you want to handle this. I think Anthony Camacho, we need him to look at some of the big main issues, like the legality, especially when they're saying, hey, you can't do this, this is illegal. But some of the other things, a lot of it, most of it is something that we can just handle internally, and we just need to make a decision. So we do need to, I think we should just go ahead and meet whether Anthony Camacho gives us an answer or not. And we can, those main things we can kind of put aside, but the other things we can already meet and start making decisions about it.
Rachel, can you give me an example of when you say that somebody said that provision is legal? What, sure. Like, what did they say?
Let me just pull it up real quick.
I believe it had to do with the employment of GovQuam or something, disclosure.
Yes, yeah, thank you. You have a better memory than me. I was just kind of hit over the head with this. So we put in the rules and regs that our rule was that, you know what, if we were saying that we don't want Guam Cancer Trust Fund money to be paid, to be used to pay an employee at another entity who is getting the money, who is already a full-time GovGuam employee. We just felt like that was an inappropriate use of Guam Cancer Trust Fund money. Because there was an executive director of one of the organizations. He was a full-time GovGuam employee, and then he was getting paid as an executive director from the, and it was coming out of the Guam Cancer Trust Fund budget. So we said, you know what, we're not going to allow that anymore, because it just doesn't sit well with us. You know, we didn't say it's illegal, but we're just saying we are going to make that one of our rules.
And I believe it was cited by the OPA, correct?
Yes, it was cited by the OPA that why are you guys letting this happen? So that's why we said, okay, we never felt comfortable with it, and so we're not going to allow it. But then, you know, this individual came back and said, well, that's illegal because GovGuam employees are allowed to work. And they are, but that doesn't mean that they can.
It doesn't mean we have to pay them.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that we have to pay them with, you know, Guam Cancer Trust Fund money. And so.
And Peter, just for your information on why we put it into the rules and regs, was because there was one year, grant funding year, where the council voted not to include that, or line vetoed, if you want to call it that, that specific section of paying the salary of the executive director. But as you know, the president has the prerogative to approve even when we don't approve. And he went and approved that because the organization went back to him. And so he overrode the decision of the council and approved everything. So in order to address that issue, we chose to put it into the rules and reg, especially after it was cited by the OPA.
I really think that you guys have enough ammunition to go and move forward with this without a legal opinion. I mean, just what you've expressed here, with just because one person says that may not be legal, everybody, it seems like Ken and Kathy are on board, you, Rachel, on board that shouldn't happen. I agree with you guys. I don't think that a full-time GovGuam employee that's also an executive director of a nonprofit should get any of our money. I'm concerned, just like Kathy, that it's taking a long time, and I don't want to lose credibility with the senators, especially when, not at this meeting, but at a future meeting to come, I want to talk about how do we lobby to get the money that is owed to us. And I think that before we embark on getting that money, because there's several million dollars still owed to us, we got to demonstrate that we're responsible ourselves and get those rules and regulations out to the legislature. So I personally don't feel we need a legal opinion.
So here's my
question. And Ken's statement of we don't have to pay it.
Yeah.
We don't.
But here's my question, because, you know, I was told that, well, you know, if people provide testimony at these public hearings, then you have to take their written statements, and then you have to address every single one of them or justify why. And so that's why I was kind of like, oh my God, it's going to, you know, there's 22 pages of comments. How, this is going to take us forever to go through that. It's going to take us another year.
I see Joe Meskin shaking his head no, that we don't have to.
You don't have to.
We don't. We don't. And I speak from experience as someone who has delivered voluminous comments on legislation.
Okay, so
over
if
the years.
If that's the case, then let's send it. I mean,
yeah, we just included in our report. These are the comments we've received. We reviewed them, and that's all we need to say.
We've done the AAA process, and
this is what we've come up with. Because when you look at it, 95% of the comments are grammatical.
Yeah,
say
it's
this, not that.
Like
you misspelled this word.
I mean, and as you all know, we worked a long time together, and we went through and we really tried to make sure that we addressed the OPA's issues, all of these things. And
it
so
took us a year.
It took us a long time. So I just, you know, I would be so. I've already given it to Anthony. I'll ask him if he wants to comment, or I'll just ask him, hey, if you haven't looked at it yet, then we're ready to send it.
No, I would we just vote on it. We can send it.
Ask
we already voted on it. We voted that we're good.
Yeah.
Yep. And so submit it to the legislature.
Yeah.
Ask for the law.
Okay.
I'm good with it.
Because I dread the idea of going back again, trying to address those comments. No. Okay, great. Let's do it then.
Yeah, send it.
Okay. Great. Did you
need another decision there?
Yes, major. Okay.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe just for the record, we re-vote on it because we have, Peter is a new member that didn't vote on it and we're ready to submit it. So for the record, that that all council members were given the opportunity to vote.
Okay.
Maybe. So just in case we get questioned, because the last time we voted to approve it and we didn't submit it, Peter was not on the council, but he is now. So maybe just
a formality
here.
Yeah. Thank you. I was looking for the word.
Okay. So I'd like to call for a vote. Do I have a motion to approve again and to move it to the legislature?
Second.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. So it's approved and we will move forward and send it on to the legislature. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Very productive session.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's after 5. So I will call for an adjournment and we will meet next month.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
So much. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.